Good evening. You're listening to Three Moves Ahead. I'm Len. I'm your host this week, and I have almost completely lost my voice. So we'll try to do the best we can. I am joined by our friend Mike Williams.
Hello. I think it adds sort of a smoky, almost jazzy style to it.
It kind of does. It's kind of like 3AMSMR. That was something. I tried. 3AMS. No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And our friend John Boldy.
Hello, everyone.
And on this very smoky, very jazzy episode, we're going to be talking about Balatro, which I think kind of snuck up on a lot of people and has become a bit of a surprise hit over the last couple weeks. Again, after we talked about it on this show, obviously.
Obviously, it was us. It was not anything else.
Well, John, you mentioned that you're interested in card game taxonomy. So what kind of a card game is Balatro?
All right. Well, okay. So I think it's relatively important to talk about like how Balatro is actually played. On the face of it, this is like a poker themed roguelike. In that you have a standard 52 card deck of playing cards, right? 12 face cards, 4 suits, etc., right? 2 through 10 and aces. You get me. And every round you want to play a poker hand. Or in every turn you want to play a poker hand. And your goal is to get points from a set of baseline scores for each hand, multiply by a multiplier, depending on what you constructed the hand out of, and its value. And then that gives you chips or points, and you want to use those to beat a score each round. And that score is called a blind because it's sort of poker themed. And you really, we talked about this a little bit in like the Next Fest demo one, which is where I don't usually love poker themed games. And this is a great poker themed game because it doesn't try to do the thing that's good about poker that you can't do well in a video game, which is make you bet, because you can't play against someone. You can't play against another person. You can't play off of them and what they're doing and figure out what they're thinking. And so what makes Balatro so interesting and useful is that it uses the sort of poker theme to do insane deck builder stuff, where you start getting special jokers that you hold that give your deck weird powers and increase your multipliers or make different things do different stuff. And you can upgrade the value of certain hands, and you can pull these tarot cards that mutate and change what the cards in your hand do, or let you change the composition of your deck, or you can just start adding more cards to your deck, right? You can do all this weird stuff. And ultimately, Balatro isn't any of the traditional card game types. It's a push your luck game where you're constantly saying, I could get a better hand, or I could tweak my deck in some way to be better in order to get bigger and bigger scores and pass successive rounds, some of which are boss rounds and give you limitations like, oh, all of your club cards are useless this round or what have you, in order to ultimately win beat 8 different boss rounds in order to win. Did I miss anything?
Yeah,
no, I think that's about right.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of the roguelike nature of it. It's all about the run, and it's all about building the correct combination of jokers, which, as John said, offer different multipliers to specific hands. Planet cards, which level up the multiplier and values of specific poker hand types, and tarot cards and spectral cards, which allow you to actually like change the composition of the deck that you have. You start off with a just basic full 52 card deck, and then over time you can, through the tarot and spectral cards, you know, make an ace shiny, a foil version, so it has more like chip value or different things like that. And it's all about building the correct deck to get to the end, usually focused on specific poker hands. So like early on, you'll be like, okay, let's start leveling up two pair, and two pair becomes your hand that you always want to play, or straights, or I got particularly far with one that changed straight from five cards to four cards. It's a roguelike. It's about the run. Like, are you building the correct run? And of course there's some luck in that, because you're pulling jokers at random, you're pulling planet cards at random and whatnot.
I definitely got into the two pair meta, where, cause like it's based on, so like the amount of chips you get per hand that you play, which you're ultimately trying to get higher than the current blind, which it's basically you're doing like turn-based RPG combat where different poker hands do different amounts of damage is kind of how I think about it. And
you have like the set number, you know, you have, I think by default you have four hands to beat each point total, and you get a set number of, I think by default, three discards among those hands. And you know, you draw, like, it's got funky things going on, like you draw an eight card hand, right? You're playing by yourself from the whole deck of 52. There's not like five card stud poker math going on here, where like you can just ever discard or play five cards at a time.
Although the math can get kind of funky when you start like, okay, because of this tarot card, I now have five King of Hearts in my deck. But
oh, sure. and there's also like there's little cute invented names for all the made up hands, right? Like once you've got five, you know, you can play five of a kind, and then you could actually play five of a kind of the same suit or whatever, right? And you get a five flush, and that has its own even higher tier of nonsense, right?
But then like, so the basic, when you start a run, the hands are the regular poker hands, and they are arranged hierarchically in the order that they would trump each other in regular poker, giving you like higher base damage amounts and higher multipliers as you go up that scale. But then, as Mike mentioned, you can level up specific hands. And what I caught on to pretty early is like, all right, I'm going to go straight to the moon with like the really common hands that are easy to get. Like two pair is pretty common, and you're playing four cards, so you get the base value of all those four cards. I think it's Uranus that is the planet card that upgrades two pair. So like I was always looking for those. And there's also a joker, I think you can buy, where it's like the planet packs that you open, because there's all, you will also open packs, like it's Magic the Gathering or something.
Yeah, there's a little store in between rounds where you can buy new packs of cards, or you can buy little single cards that show up at the top that are like jokers, or even your sort of Slay the Spire artifacts that are called vouchers, that are just like, this is a permanent bonus. It doesn't matter what cards you have in your hand or in your deck, right? You just get this from now on.
Yeah,
one more hand per round.
I got a joker that, I got a joker that was like your most commonly played hand. You will always get that planet when you open a planet pack.
Sure. Yeah.
And that run was insane, because like two pair was worth like an X16 multiple. It was way better than a royal flush. It was ridiculous. But that was the meta I kind of fell into, but I think I kind of hit a rut with it. I still have not finished an entire run. I've gotten to the final blind, or the final ante, I think they're called, but I haven't actually finished a run.
Yeah, the problem usually comes in, you'll like the two pair meta, you'll rely on a certain type of hand, or you will have built a deck with a certain suit, and then you will run into the boss run that is like, oh, if you built a hearts deck, oh, hearts don't count anymore. or you can only play whatever poker hand you play first is the only hand you can play that round, or you can only play a hand once per round. So,
or you can play one hand.
That's one's brutal. Like, it lowers the base amount you have to hit, but I don't think I've ever beaten that.
That one's very funny because it's like is entirely dependent on what deck you build. Like, if you're some insane, like, oh, I just made this crazy discard deck and all I do is just throw out every card until I get the royal flush or what have you that I've guaranteed the probability of, you just explode that one. And then if you're any other deck, you're like, well, I'm fucked. Yeah, that was fun. Yeah. I guess this is over now.
Yeah, there's so like every level, which are called antes, there's like a small blind, a big blind, and a boss blind. And the boss blind always has an ability. I was just going to look and see what some of them are since I have the game open. There's like, you know, all face cards are drawn face down, or like all cards after the first hand are drawn face down, or face cards don't count, or like a specific suit doesn't count, or something like that. There's some pretty brutal ones.
I love the face down ones because there's an interface element that lets you sort cards by rank.
Yeah.
Sort the cards in your hand by rank or by suit. And you can use that to reverse engineer what some of your face down cards are, even though you're not allowed to turn them over.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can select a card and then swap between rank and suit and see where it moves around and be like, okay, that's a two and it's there. It's all the way on the right. So it's probably like a diamond. Okay, I'm going to get rid of it. And you toss it, right? It's really great little... there's like a lot of little fiddly optimization or like good choices, best practices and things like that you could do. But because of its nature as what is ultimately like a pretty random push your luckish kind of game, you can really lean into that and just be like, I'm going big or going home, and just, you know, blaze through runs, not really caring if you make little mistakes. Or you can like get very aggressive and optimize and try and figure out like, oh, this is the best possible hand I could play. Okay, I'm gonna keep tossing cards until I can try and like until I run out of discards or I get the best hand. Right.
Yeah. Mike, how far have you made? Have you actually like beaten a full run yet?
I have not. I got pretty far on the four card straight hand that I was talking about, but then I ended up on it was one of the later ones, and it was like you can only play one hand, and I was low on discards by the way I had built my deck, so I did one discard, didn't get I did my one discard, didn't get to a straight, and then had to play a pair, and that was it. Like,
oh man.
Like, I could not play the hand that I had built the deck for within the rules and the limitations of that particular boss ante. And that was that.
That's brutal.
Yeah, the craziest run I got on, which I posted on Twitter, is so you can have normally up to five jokers at a time, and they don't go into your deck. They just kind of sit above your deck and apply some kind of modifier. But I got a joker that every heart card I played added to my multiplicative modifier. Every spade card I played added to my multiplier. Hearts and diamonds count as the same suit. Spades and clubs count as the same suit. So now every card I play basically is doing that. Then I got one that every face card you play adds to that. And then I got a negative joker, which like negative is one of the modifiers, kind of like holographic, that can do something weird to the card, which is that it gives you an extra joker slot. And it was all cards count as face cards. So every card I played added like 8 to my multiplier. And then I ran into a boss blind that was all face cards are debuffed, meaning I could play nothing. and right. So I was robbed, but that was the furthest I made it.
Yeah, and that's usually what ends up happening. Like, you'll build towards, like, yeah. your deck will be built towards a specific yeah. thing, and then you will run into just that one limitation that's like, oh, now your thing doesn't work at all.
Yeah. I gotta say, though, you're never, I mean, sometimes you are completely screwed, but you're never like, it doesn't ever feel like you're totally shit out of luck on the boss things, because there's some ways around to negate them, but you can also, like, you can always sell your jokers, right? Even mid round, you can just toss them out. So, like, if you've got the one that, because of the boss rule, makes you feel like you're completely unable to proceed, it might cripple your deck into the future, but you could always, like, I could sell this one that makes everything a face card and keep going, see if I can beat it, right?
I probably could have done that.
Like, but there's such a scrappy little game in that way, where you're always like, I feel like I always have a chance, even though I'm definitely fucked.
That's probably what I need to do to, like, overcome the hurdle I'm at right now, is to stop getting attached to the platonic ideals of these decks. And just be willing to kill a combo because I need to kill it to move on. I need to learn detachment. I need to become a Balatro monk. I think there's probably a pretty insane skill ceiling here with all of the little stuff like that you can do. Or even like getting the thing really early on that adds extra vouchers to every shop, because then if you do run into a really terrible boss blind, there's like double the chance that you'll get the one that lets you reroll the boss blind. So, like, yeah, there's probably a lot of little stuff like that, you know, you won't even think of until you've played 100 or 200 runs or something, which is really easy to do.
Yeah, you can lose a lot of time, and like I said, when we shouted it out during the next fest, I was just like, immediately you start playing, you're like, you start seeing all of the strategies, and even at that point, you're not in, like, you don't have access to all of the, like, cards that could be in the run, because there's a ton of different jokers. I forget what the full number is, but I know it's like almost 150 or maybe 150.
It's exactly. I'm looking now, because I've only unlocked 60 out of 150 jokers.
Yeah.
So I haven't even seen half of them yet.
Yeah, and you can, as John pointed out, make a joker slate of 5 jokers that you can switch up. So a combination of 5 of 150 different cards, and that's before you even get to building and managing your deck. Whereas, you know, by the time you get to the end of certain decks, like, you know, one run I got pretty much all of my cards have been turned into face cards, like the King, Queen, Jack, all that stuff, because I was playing for Royal Flush was my focus hand on that one, but I could also play high pairs, and there's just a lot of flexibility and luck. Sometimes luck just doesn't go, the heart of the cards, as the Yu-Gi-Oh fans would say, is not in your favor.
Yeah it is definitely the kind of roguelike where you can just be screwed. Like, not every run is winnable. You might just get bad stuff, but I guess that kind of fits with the theme of poker-based deck builder.
I mean, I don't know if every run is winnable. I think there are runs where the world just, you're just screwed, right? Like, but I think that's the nature of this sort of roguelike at the same
time. No, that's what I meant every run is? I meant every run is not winnable.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is sort of delightful too about the jokers is, it's been a while since I felt this way about a decent roguelike, which is that, you know, this sort of roguelite game where you do runs, right? That sort of focus. Mm-hmm. I haven't felt the way I felt when I started playing Slay the Spire in a long time. And that specific way is you look at stuff in the game and you're like, that's terrible. I don't know why I would ever use it. Right. And then five games in, a couple hours of playing, you realize like, oh, that's actually just, it's situational, and you could use that and it would be, it could be, or would be amazing. It would be so powerful if you had access to it in a specific way. Right. And I really love that. I really love that sort of build space, that sort of depth of strategy in the game where you're like, yeah, I don't know how you would build a deck around a weird card that does X, Y, or Z thing, right? Like, there's a Joker that's like, every time you discard a specific face card, I think it's like Jacks, right? Like, every time you discard a Jack, this increases the amount by which it multiplies your multiplier at the end of each round, right? Like, there's that sort of weird stuff that, it's an oddity, but if and when you pull that off, or you see it early enough in the run that you can build around it, like, you're going to have a really memorable time with it. And there are so many opportunities to have those really memorable runs, the memorable playthroughs that you got.
So, going with that, like, you would say, all right, so now you got discarding Jax is important. So you would start building, you start transmuting more of your cards that you don't care about into Jax.
Yeah, all those and twos and threes and stuff, you're like, fuck those.
Get them out of here.
Right, turn those into Jacks. Then you also probably start buffing your discard, which you can do, like, ability. And then,
yeah, you can alter cards, right? So, like, you could turn those Jacks, and you're like, oh, I'm going to get purple stamps. So every time I discard the Jacks, I get free buff cards to use or what have you.
Right, and so then you're building around the idea of throwing a Jack away on purpose for every hand, just so you can play that final hand that is fully buffed. And then, like, see, even when you're building that sort of style, if you happen to unluckily run into the single hand play, then maybe you're screwed, or maybe you can still pull it out. You don't know. As with any good roguelike, there's always that luck, but the things that you can build are interesting. And we haven't even talked about decks, which change, like, your starting condition right from the jump.
Yeah, they're your sort of, like, quote, character classes or what have you.
Right.
It's like, oh, this, you know, red deck starts with an extra discard, blue deck gets an extra play.
Yeah.
This one starts with more money, stuff like that. And then as you win with those, you start to unlock ever more complex ones.
So maybe this is a noob trap, but I've been playing exclusively with the blue deck, because I feel like you don't get more bang out of anything than you get for being able to play an extra hand every single blind. Like, is that?
I think that, I mean, so, like, discarding, getting, so, like, this, I think the starter one, right? So it gives you that extra one discard point.
Yeah.
Right. The red deck. As soon as you're like, okay, I'm not playing anything worse than a full house this run, that discard starts to become really powerful when you specialize towards it. Cause you're like, no, if I only need to play one, maybe two hands per round, then it doesn't matter how many hands I can play. What really matters is that I can discard enough hands to get to the one hand I really need. I mean, I don't think any of the decks are like a noob trap or anything like that. And I think some of them, as far as I can tell, are actually purposefully worse. Like, they're just a little bit worse than any of the others.
And if you get deep enough, like, on certain runs, you may only need that single hand every time. Like I've gotten to the midpoint on some, usually with the decks built around pairs and huge multipliers, where the first hand is always the hand that I win. until I run into some sort of limitation where it doesn't, at which point the blue deck is functionally not useful for me. Like, it's not giving me any benefit. It's not hurting me, but it's also not helping me.
The other really wacky combo I remember running into that was like super esoteric, you're talking about like memorable runs, is there's like a joker, I think, that gives you its multiplier goes up every time you play a tarot card.
Yeah.
And then there's another one that I think it's every time you play a 4 or an 8, it gives you a tarot card. And then there's one that every time you open any kind of pack, there's a 50-50 chance of giving you a tarot card. And I was just pulling emperors and then like whatever the one it is that where you turn the left card into the right card to turn all of the cards in my deck into 4s and 8s. So like
forevermore.
I was just like, I was drowning in tarot cards constantly. I wish I had gotten the extra consumable slot for that run, because I pretty much had to spend them as soon as I got them. But yeah, it does hit a point where like, even if you have a really good additive multiplayer cards, you can't really keep up with the scaling on the higher blinds. Like you need things that multiply your multiplier, or you're just not going to make it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that can be true, though. I think a really solid combination of things that increase multiplier and things that just increase like base income of chips in some way can be really effective. I think you can win like that. I'm saying that, though, I definitely haven't personally won that way.
Do you remember what the deck you used the first time you won was?
I think I want to say it was all flushes all the time.
Okay.
Where I had built it in such a way that like, if you had 5 cards of the same suit, okay. So it was a discard type deck where I was just trying to get like any flush made up of like 8s or higher ish. And it was getting a bunch of extra chips, because I had like, you know, cards that are just like, yeah, you get more if you're playing a flush, more if you're playing a flush, sort of like win more if you're already winning stuff. I wish I could remember what the specific card was there. I had something that was massively multiplying the multiplier itself, and I had just pumped. I played so many flushes in the first few rounds, and then I got the little ticket that lights it. So that, you know, when you get a planet card that increases, when you open the planet card packs to increase the multiplier for a specific hand, you'll always get your most played hand. And then I was just buying more and more packs of planet cards and increasing the flush. And it got to the point where like at the end of that run, I could play like the worst flush in my whole deck. I could play like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it would be 10,000 points, right?
I think the one I got farthest was the 2-pair. I think the Joker loadout was like 8, like a plus multiplier for pair, a huge plus multiplier if your played hand had less than 3 cards, and then one that repeated the multipliers again. At the end of the run, and Raised Fist, which doubles the rank of the lowest card. And then I built the deck around low pairs. So I was slowly transmuting the deck to be like 2 through 5. So okay. That I would always like hit that Raised Fist. And there was another Joker, but I forget what it was. That was probably the run that I got the furthest on.
The one that I was literally delaying this podcast to finish, just now, was really great and really memorable, where it was, I got early on a rare Joker that was like every other Joker that's the uncommon rarity gives you 1.5 multiplier, right? Times 1.5 the multiplier. So like If it's a multiplier of 6, the first uncommon Joker triggers and it becomes a 9, and then it becomes a 13.5, right? So I had that, and then I had four other Jokers that were uncommon that also multiplied the multiplier in some weird way or another. And then I got like a negative Joker that was also uncommon and multiplied the multiplier.
Oh no.
So it was just at the end of every round, I would play my hand. I would be like, oh, it's pretty good. It's like a time to multiplier. And then it would just exponentially, not exponentially, geometrically increase, just like boom, 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 right? This huge pile of multiplier. And it's just really satisfying. And the game also has the thing where the more effects get played on rounds in, as each effect plays, the next one plays ever so closer to the one before. So like if you have one of those decks with a bajillion on end of hand played effects, it'll get faster and faster and faster until it's just like burning and little beeps and boops, right, play every time something happens.
Yeah.
It'll just like burn through the whole stack of
the numbers to happen. Catch on fire if you get like high enough.
Yeah, the higher and higher the multipliers and the base score go, they'll catch on fire, which is all really cleverly made where it scales to what the goal is too.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's not a fixed thing. You have to be getting it has to be resulting in like a decent percentage of the actual target number. It's worth saying that like I think a lot of the appeal in this is also that it's nicely produced on top of all this. It's got this very weird, trippy card game world jokery aesthetic to it.
It has an adjustable CRT filter in the graphics settings.
A true classic. I know people who love those and people don't, but
No. My only real issue with this game is the fact that there is not already a version for my iPad. Like as soon as I played it on the Next Fest, I was like, I just want to be able to play this like on my iPad wherever or on my phone.
I think there's a version for your Switch.
Yeah, it's on Switch now, but that's like the only portable.
Yeah, that's the one I have. I play now is the one on Switch.
I've been walking around with on Steam Deck. Very pleased with myself.
Oh, yeah. I still have not shelled out for a Steam Deck.
It's worthwhile, but it's so big. It's so big. It's such a heavy machine.
Crank the brightness all the way up, and it'll trigger the part of your brain that touched a Sega Game Gear at some point in the 90s and was like, this is the greatest object I've ever seen in my life.
Well, because like sometimes I'll like lay in bed and I'll have the Switch and I'll like hold it above my head.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah, and you'll drop it, right?
Yeah, like, and I don't want to kill myself by dropping a Steam Deck on my skull. So the other interesting thing with how the runs are structured in Balatro is there's relatively little gambling for a poker game. It's actually kind of interesting. There was like a whole legal thing that happened where they got rated 18 plus for having gambling imagery in their game, and they had to like appeal it and prove that you don't actually gamble and it doesn't encourage you to gamble. And then one of the ratings boards went back on it or something, which is kind of interesting.
There is in fact zero gambling, and it's not.
Yeah,
I wish I could remember the name of it. It's not the inspiration for it wasn't even poker. It's a regional game, a regional solitaire of some kind that uses poker hands.
Yeah. So when you beat a blind, like every ante or level is a small blind, a big blind, and a boss blind. The small gives you $3, the big gives you $4, and the boss gives you $5, and then you get $1 for every unused hand you had out of the limited number of hands you can play. And then you can earn interest on money that you just have lying around at like a 5-to-1 rate, which is kind of interesting in terms of like, do I want to spend this now or keep going? But then it'll let you skip the small and big blind with like a temptation of like, we'll let you open a free pack of cosmic cards, or the next shop is going to have a holographic Joker in it, which I've found is often like enough rope to hang yourself with. Like if you take too many of those little deals, you just won't have enough like cards, good cards to beat the boss blind. So it can get kind of tricky when it's like, okay, holographic choker would be really nice because whatever other power it has, that's going to add a multiplier on top of that. But if I aced this next blind and I got like, you know, the full $7 or $8 out of it plus interest, would I be able to buy better stuff in the shop? So to like compensate for the fact that I skipped it. So that's kind of what I see is sort of the, it's almost like an I'm in or I fold sort of mechanic a little bit.
Yeah.
That is constantly like having you make these little decisions at every step of the run.
And there are meta, there are builds for the core gameplay that tie into the meta mechanic of like the earning and spending the dollars too, right? Like there are jokers that increase the amount of interest you get or add things based on how much money you're sitting on. And so it's kind of fun to be able to, I like anytime the game is willing to cross the streams are willing to cross the streams in their design spaces like that too.
Yeah, I did end up with one where I essentially, I forget what the benefit was. I think it was like however many cards I had left in my hand or something like that, but it would end up giving me a lot of money at the end of every round. And so the play and strategy there was literally to just buy up every store after every round. Like whatever was there, I would just buy the entire thing because I was so ahead in gold. And I don't even think that round failed for like anything major. I hit one of the boss blinds and I just had nothing. But I was like flush with spectral cards and jokers, and it was so, it felt so good until it died. Which is Blotro in a nutshell.
Felt so good till I died.
So there is, like you said, there isn't any betting, which with real money wise, there isn't any. There's also no microtransactions. But there is kind of a betting system in the sense that like going for gold usually comes at the expense of going for other things like multipliers or, you know, jokers that give you more base chips or whatever. So I do find that I'm often having to balance between earning more money to get more cards and better cards versus just making number go up.
There's a really great, a lot of the best roguelites have this sort of meta play where you balance like future value against current value. Like if I buy this, it's going to be really helpful for the first three or four blinds, but it's going to be worthless by blind five, right? It's like, it's just not going to be adding enough. So do I want to spend that money now, or do I want to save this money, maybe make some interest on it and have the opportunity to buy something more valuable later? And I like that Balatro encourages you to sell things you don't need anymore. Like see a better joker, get rid of the old one, get a new one, like swap in this thing. And it does that very effectively by having everything have a sell value. Often a sell value that you can affect in certain ways as well. It can't be understated how great it is in a game like this to see that sort of flexibility be encouraged and enabled, where like you thought your build was going to be this at the beginning because you got this decent or pretty good early card, but actually you see an awesome opportunity to go for something else. And then you're able to do that by sort of selling off or trading away in some way the cards you don't need anymore in order to get the things you do need. That's like one of my frustrations with the Slay the Spire legacy of deck builders is like by room 7, you need to know exactly what build you're going for, or what have you. Right.
Yeah. I found that, I feel like one of the moments where I kind of leveled up in Balatro, like, okay, I have learned something that is making my runs significantly easier, is when I kind of attached to the concept that like early game, just get any five jokers. Just have all those slots filled. If you're running five jokers, you're in a better spot than if you weren't running five jokers. And then if you see a better one, just sell it and, you know, like, sell the one you don't need and make room. Like, I was always, like, holding spots open for, like, yeah, well, I don't really need that. So I'll save that spot for something else. And that's, no, just stack them up, like, as you see them, whatever it is. Just throw it in there. Why the hell not?
Yeah.
And you can always sell it and replace it later.
And you also never know when the, like, thing you bought, even though it looked worthless or didn't have a lot of value, like, it turns out it synergizes with some rare drop you get three rounds later, and you're like, oh, now I can make a great deck, right?
Yeah.
Because you can just sell it. Like, you can get half value back out of almost anything or more, right? Like, there are cards that, you know, every round you hold it, it increases the resale value of other jokers or what have you, right? Like, goofy things like that. You can even buy, like, an Arcana card or a Spectral card and then sell it back for half value later, right? You're like, oh, I don't need this buff. I'm selling it.
Right? Yeah.
Like, just great. Love that stuff.
When you're talking about, like, current value versus future value, there are even jokers that are just, like, explicitly set up that way. Like, there's one that's, like,
right?
Yeah.
Adds three to its resale value every round. You buy it for four. So, like, you could just sell it back the next round and make money, or you just hold on to it.
Well, and I was thinking of the one that, like, it starts out as a minus 20 or a times 20 multiplier, but it loses four every round you play it in. So
yeah,
it's like,
it's like a seltzer bottle, right? And then there's an ice cream too, that's like, it starts out giving plus 100 chips, but every hand played, it goes down by five, right?
Right. So it's like, you get this and it's like, all right, I'm going to be good for, like, the first three or four antes. I'm not really going to have to pay that much attention. But then I need to use that time that I've got kind of this freebie to capitalize and to build a better. I love that we're using the term Joker loadout. That's such a
video games, everybody.
Yeah, this is video gaming in 2020.
I actually love that this is a gamer ass video game, right? Like, this is pure. I like numbers. I like builds. I like stuff, but it is such an approachable veneer because of the playing card, the poker element, that I think you could actually give this to a wide variety of people and they would at least at first glance be like, okay, this is a card game. Like, I recognize what kind of card game this is.
And I mean, it does feel good when you see the you play a hand and you see the chip counter start to go like, bloop, bloop. And the multipliers hit one after the other, and then it starts the little fire effect on them.
Yeah.
And it can just keep, especially on latter parts of runs and later decks, like, you can be sitting there and the counting process is a full, like, you know, 30 seconds of just adding up all of your multipliers. And it definitely hits some part of your lizard brain.
It's definitely a type of game that uses a lot of the tricks that much more financially exploitative games use to make you feel good, but it doesn't actually want any more of your money. Just, you bought it and you're good.
Yeah, you spent your 15 American dollars and now you're going to move on with your life.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why I find it kind of funny that gambling regulators were worried about it, but, you know, it happens. You guys have, like, a least favorite boss blind to fate? I think mine is the one where you can only play one hand, because I don't think I've ever beaten that guy.
Yes, that's the needle. I hate it so much that I know exactly which blind it is. It's the needle. You play a single hand, and I hate it so much because you might be able to get through that, but the luck of the draw usually is not in my favor running into that. Like, it's usually not my first hand that's going to win the round.
That's so funny. I think of that one. I mean, I talked about it a little bit earlier, but, like, I gravitate towards the, like, I'm gonna play one big hand and it's going to be a giant number, because I want to see one giant number pop up builds, because I like that the fewer hands you play in a round, the more money you get. So obviously you've got to optimize towards that. What if you can only play one hand? That's so much more money every round, right? You start to get so attached to those ideas. So the needle is not actually the one I fear the most, which I find very funny.
And then there's the all of one type of card are debuffed. Those can throw a wrench into your runs. If you were based on, I had one where it was a spade deck, and I think I ran, I forget what the blind name of it is, but all spade cards are debuffed, and I was just like, oh, just let's walk away. We're done here.
The one that I actually, I feel like the one that I've lost to the most is like maybe the wall, which is just like, it's really mean.
That's just the extra large blind, right?
Yeah, it's just like four times. Yeah, no, you just need four
that
times.
That one I don't have any trouble like with. That. That's so interesting. Like, that's the one I always wanted.
I don't, that's the funny, because it's like, I don't think I've actually lost to it more than any other blind, but the times I lose to it are just, oh, okay. I just didn't get the hand.
Yeah.
There's the two card. It really emphasizes those, like, well, there's only five cards left in the deck. I've discarded through everything else and played through everything else, but the two cards left in the deck are the only two cards I need.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the other one that I find really hard is the water. It's the one that makes you start with zero discards.
Uh-huh.
Because discards are just so important for me building good hands. Like, it's pure luck. It's absolutely pure luck if you're up against that one. If your first hand is good, you're good. If it's not, you're probably dead. Like, that's
oh, that's funny, because that's like that's the opposite of my problem. Since I play towards only needing to play one hand,
oh yeah,
I just use all my other quote hand plays as a discard. I'm just like, well, these are five cards I don't need. I don't care if it makes anything. I'm just tossing them on the table. No, right? This
was another eureka moment I had, was when I realized that just like throwing trash cards in with a good hand, even though they're not going to be scored, is like getting free extra discards. When I figured that out, yeah, that was another one of those moments.
Yeah. Oh, and the raised, I used that for the early part of when I had the raised hand joker. Like, I would just throw a hand and then put whatever my lowest cards in as the rest of that hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are even ones that are that play to that, right? Like, there's a joker called Splash, which is like everything you play is scored, even if it's not technically part of the hand, right? And so you can play towards funny builds and mess around with, like,
seen that.
I feel like almost, I know it's not literally every, but almost every part of the game that can be interacted with, every little nuance of strategy is tied into something somewhere.
Yeah, I will say another blind that hurt me. I don't remember what it was called. It's the one where you can only play, not the one where you can only play one hand type for the entire round. It's the one where every hand has to be a different type.
Yeah, that one's
so crazy. If you like play a pair, and your deck is based around pairs, and you don't hit the thing, then you can't play a pair again for the rest of that round.
Yeah.
And I think that killed me on I had a three of the kind deck built. And the first three of a kind I played didn't hit above the blind itself, and I couldn't play a three of a kind again.
The other thing I'm reminded of as I'm looking at this screen that has all of the different boss blinds on it is, like, another reflection of the implicit sense of humor of these developers is, like, blinds 14 through 16 are written in scientific notation.
Yeah.
Like, blind 14 is the base chip amount is 2.900 e to the 13th.
Yeah, like, once you start scoring high enough, it goes into scientific notation.
Like, that to me is just hilarious.
And it is, it's a solo developer. It's one guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is we've gotten some bangers from solo developers in the last here.
Solo and small, we've had, I'd say across gaming, we've had a number of impressive runs, enough that I actually found an article I wrote that was like, you can't predict what's going to be the winner.
No. And
small games are just blowing up, and this is another one of those examples.
Yeah, it's something I think everybody wishes they could figure out. Like, what is it that makes these games hit? I feel like even Helldivers 2, which we talked a little bit about on the most recent Patreon episode, like nobody was, including the developers, was expecting that to get as big as it did. And like this weird poker game with tarot cards, like nobody could have predicted. I think it's a little bit terrifying as someone who's getting into game development, but I guess it's also kind of maybe a little bit hopeful in that it's like, yeah, you never know. Like, could happen to anybody, but we can't predict what's going to happen. So, I was going to see if there's anything we missed in terms of like major mechanics, but I think we pretty well covered it.
It's not really the like you will know immediately if it's going to be your jam. Like it only takes probably like 3 or 4 rounds or blinds or whatever. Like you do.
Yeah, this is definitely the kind of game you'll know if you're going to enjoy it inside the refund window. It's not like one of the some of the other roguelikes where like people are like, yeah, just give it 8 hours or so and then you're really gonna get it.
It's become kind of like what Vampire Survivors was to me in 2022, or it's the game I load up when I just want to play something really quick. Like I just need to take a break from what I'm writing to like play something for 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh, that would be apocalyptic for me, man. I had stuff to do earlier this week, one morning, and I was like, uh-huh. I have an hour and a half till I really need to get going. I'll just load up Balatro, and then it was like 3 PM. Just gone, just vanished, like the whole day just devoured.
Yeah, I kind of did that over the weekend, but luckily I didn't have much else to do. So.
I was just trying to warn everyone out there that it's not that kind of game for everyone.
True. Yeah, no, it definitely is something where you could get into a cycle of like, just one more run. I got, that was an unlucky draw. Let's just go for one more. I would definitely say it gets my recommendation. And, you know, even if you're a little on the fence, like John said, it is something where you could tell within the refund window whether you're gonna like it or not. So I would encourage you to give it a try. Mike, where are you falling on this one?
I mean, as soon as I played it on Next Fest, I was like, this is it, y'all. This is the way, the truth, and the light. Do not pass go. Do not skip this demo. Pick it up now. So I was ready for Balatro to hit as soon as it did. I want to say it launched while I was on vacation in Japan, and I still picked it up and played it. Oh, wow. While I was there. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think it's definitely one of those games where at $15... American, $15 US, it is hard not to say like, you should play this, you should try it, it's good. Don't go out to dinner or skip that movie or what have you, right? Like that other thing you were gonna do, skip it because this is a bunch of time for that value, right?
Right. Yeah. I'll definitely probably be keeping this in my rotation for a while, at least until I can win and beat that final ante. It's taunting me.
And there are a bunch of decks to unlock, which blew me away.
Oh, yeah.
I think when I first, like at first I was like, oh, there's going to be 4 or 5 of these. There's like a dozen. There's so many different decks to play as. And then there's very rare, weird things that you can get your hands on, which are really fun. Which is that I don't want to spoil anything for some people, but that blank voucher that looks like it doesn't do anything.
I keep buying it something. Because I'm like, it has to do something though, right? Like at the point I was at before recording this episode, I was like, I'm not sure. Maybe the developers are just trolling me. Maybe it actually does nothing. Maybe they're just getting me to waste $10 every run. But I still keep buying it, so maybe one of these days I'll be rewarded. Well, as we have peacefully annexed card games and deck builders into the 3MA remit, if there are other card games and deck builders you want to hear us talk about on this show, definitely let us know. We're at 3MA on Twitter and Blue Sky. John, did you have anything to plug this week? Want to tell people where they can find you?
I've been cranking out reviews and previews this year so far. You can find me on PC Gamer and IGN for the most part, where I will continue to make as many of those as I can until they physically stop me.
Is there anything in particular that caught your eye recently, strategy or non-strategy?
I just wrapped up a review on Furthest Frontier, not Furthest Frontier, Lightyear Frontier, which is a
demo that was fun.
A little farming and crafting game where you have a mech, and that is the conceit, which is pretty much exactly what it says there on the tin,
and it has a little bit of that. What was the game where you were reclaiming nature?
Sure.
A little bit of that, like, hey, clean everything up. You're out there sucking up pollution and stuff and trying to replant, and you're building stuff, but try to do it in a less destructive way. Charming. The demo at least was charming.
Yeah, it's a charming little game about the speed of something like Slime Rancher. So solid if you want to sit back and chill.
Nice. Mike, anything to plug or just any other games that you want to point people towards that you've been into lately?
I mean, I've been playing the same stuff that everyone else is playing. Balatro, Helldivers 2, Pacific Drive. Because unlike John, I don't review games anymore, so unless it is a 3MA game that I can potentially like say, hey, let me play this ahead of time, I play it when it comes out. So Pacific Drive, I just got into when I got back in vacation. And then there's a game called 64, which is like a weird little clicker, almost machine game. Sort of an idle game, but for some reason it is once again hit like the part of my brain that's like, yeah, just keep going. It has a nice aesthetic to it. So
how was Japan?
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun and a whole lot of walking. The magic of living at home is I don't have to walk or go anywhere. So to go from like doing my casual like 2 mile exercise walks to, hey, let's do like 10 miles in a day. It's a lot. But yeah, I love Japan and we'll probably go back next year. So
we should try to do a 3MA live from Japan sometime. That'd be on the bucket list. Maybe there's some.
Please support 3MA. So on Patreon, so that we can go to Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah. I mean, if we could get an events budget, that'd be the best.
Go ahead. You just go ahead and live that. You guys set that $5,000 a month Patreon goal.
I have joked in the past about adding a Patreon goal. Maybe I talked about it on the show before. That's like, make Len a hypocrite, where it's like, if we can get to $10,000 a month, I will never talk about communism ever again. And you will have made me a part of the petite bourgeoisie and turn me into a hypocrite. You will be able to hold that over me forever. Yeah. Patreon.com/3MA. You can get access to our Discord server. You can get access to bonus episodes. I'm actually setting up this month's bonus episode right now, and it's going to be a somewhat chaotic and fun one because we're going to do full Charlie Day conspiracy theory board with lines on it about Europa Universalis 5, because they've released enough info at this point. We know it's happening. That's going to be a good one.
It's March the Eagles 2 just to fuck with you.
It would be an amazing troll. It would be an amazing troll at this point if it's not Europa Universalis 5. I would just have to slow clap for Johan if it's not. We're still doing multiplayer Anbinar. The DLC, the new DLC for Dune Spice Wars also just came out. So we might do some pick games of that if you want to join our multiplayer tier. Thanks to our Patreon producers, Mark M. and Bucktown. Gonna keep it kind of a short and sweet one this week, mostly because I can't talk, but also Pilatro is kind of a short and sweet little game. So that's gonna do it. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, for Mike and for John, this is Len saying goodnight.